Hi, Jim Vanosky with Manufacturing Talks here. You know, one of my favorite public policy outfits is right here in Michigan. It's called the Mackinac Center for Public Policy. And one of my least favorite things going on, really, in my whole career and in the political world, is handouts to manufacturers, subsidies for people in my world. I don't think they're right. And we're going to talk about that today because we've got James Homan from the Mackinac Center. He is writing extensively about that very thing. He's going to talk to us about the realities of those kinds of business subsidies. So stay tuned.
Welcome to Manufacturing Talks with Jim Vanosky. Industry has a million cool stories, and Jim talks to the movers and shakers who are making them happen. Let's dive in.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Manufacturing Talks. I'm Jim Vanosky, your host, and I'm glad to be joined by James Homan today. He is Director of Fiscal Policy at the Mackinac Center for Public Policy. Welcome, James.
Hello, Jim.
Glad to have you on today. I think we're going to be talking about something that's pretty important here. You know, it just seems like I watch the headlines and there's more and more public money being doled out to manufacturers, and it kind of sticks in my craw, and you're here to help me explain why that's not such a great thing, right?
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, this has been something I've been doing for a while, and I hope I've got an effective and persuasive message. Although it seems like sometimes it's not all that persuasive because every state seems to just keep adding more subsidy programs.
Well, and we will dive into that. Before we do, why don't you just tell us a little about yourself, your background, how you got doing what you're doing there at the Mackinac Center?
Yeah, so I got to be honest, this is my first and only professional job. I've been doing this research and writing about fiscal policy facing the state of Michigan since I was 18 years old.
Wow.
Started off as a volunteer here and kind of worked my way into this. But it's really a unique kind of job. It's a free market think tank. You know, we have principles, then we try to apply them to form Michigan's government and to try and find interesting things to move the public debate. And on this issue, on the question of selective business subsidies, our most important role is just to speak truth to power. There's a lot of important and politically powerful people who want special favors and make it seem like it's the smartest thing in the world to give them taxpayer cash. And they sell it as an economic development program. Mm-hmm. And time again, these things don't develop the economy. They waste taxpayer money. It's ineffective at creating jobs. It's expensive to the state budget, and it's unfair to other businesses. And part of my job is just to try and shout that from as many mountaintops as I can. So thank you for having me on to get to broadcast this message yet again.
Glad to do it. I've spent my whole career in manufacturing, and you know, I can certainly see the emotional argument, right? We've watched manufacturing get hollowed out in America, and so it's tough to compete.
Wait,
and hey, we can throw public money at it and bring it back, right? Yeah.
Well, let me contest that. America's producing more stuff than ever. Manufacturing production is up. It's just done with fewer people. So it does feel like we're producing less, but we are producing more. America's on the cutting edge of so many different industries. Manufacturing is up. Like, it's just this myth that we don't produce things anymore. Yep. We do produce a lot of stuff, more than we ever have before, just with fewer people.
Yeah. And honestly, the people numbers have been going up in recent years as well. So we're not even losing people like we were there for that stretch, between like the 70s and early 2000s?
Yeah, I think I was looking at some of those numbers, is that it is coming up. I mean, which is good too. Any industry that is growing feels very different from an industry that's shedding jobs.
Yep.
But yeah, manufacturing is a huge part of the economy. It's a huge part of the state of Michigan, and it is underappreciated just how much we manufacture.
Yeah. Well, so when we look at this subsidy discussion, you can certainly see the obvious draw for a politician, right? You get the headline that you're providing support to our hardworking manufacturers. There's no loss there to the public policy person who gets that going. But I've seen more and more people in my world, in manufacturing, advocates who are cheering these handouts and just these lavish subsidies that have become so prevalent here in Michigan, much less other states. So what do you say to people in my world who make that argument that, yeah, it's good for our business?
Well, it probably is good for your business. It's usually handing out taxpayer cash, special tax breaks that other people don't get, preferred loans, and grants. Like everyone wants free money. And so, yeah, it is probably good for individual businesses. But the point of an economic development program, as these things are billed at least, is to develop the economy. And they don't do that. They're ineffective at creating jobs. They're expensive to the state budget. And they're unfair to the businesses. You don't get them. As I said before, I'll probably repeat that a number of times just because I think it's an important point to drive home. And that's not an ideological point. Those are empirical claims. Like, this isn't me saying, it's like economists have used clever methods to isolate the effects of politicians' attempts to create jobs with special subsidies or tax breaks too, and again, preferred loans, and on all sorts of other economic assistance that state governments hand out on a selective basis. And what they, to just summarize the literature on this issue, is that sometimes there are positive effects. Like I wish it would be easier if no study ever found that there were positive effects. Yeah. But most of them do find negative effects. But the important thing, and the important thing for public policy, and the important thing to drive home from the literature, is that none of them produce large effects. That is, politicians think that they're landing the future for their state economies by subsidizing the right firms, or landing an Amazon or a Foxconn or these big companies that make headline job claims. We got this, and now we have secured our economic future. And no one ever finds that. These selective subsidies just do not produce that result. And actually, I'm working on something for the state of Michigan, where our lawmakers are talking about adding another subsidy program, because why not? I mean, we already have a program that allows the state government to give whatever business they want, however much business or however much money they want to give them, with the only restriction being that it has to be appropriated by the state legislature and approved by an appropriations committee, which is like that's a program that we have. It seems like that's enough. If you've like that, no one else has a program like this. That should be enough to hand out as much money to whoever you want. But they want to add another program anyway. And what I'm going to try and argue, at least to legislators, is that I know I'm persuaded that these things are bad ideas, but I know that the supporters really want them. So let's try and meet in the middle on this and say that let's try and add performance targets to these subsidy programs. That is, if they are an economic development program, they need to develop the economy. That means, and for these ones especially, politicians are elected officials are looking for job growth. And so, let's take Michigan's economic performance. It's a trajectory that we're on right now, or you know, we don't have to get too sophisticated, but you're saying that this program is going to increase that number. So the total number of jobs here in the state of Michigan, tell me how much and be able to directly attribute it to the companies who get your specialized or who get, you know, assistance from this program. Yeah. Because I think that if you tried to do that exercise, calling it out on this economic development program to have measurable impacts on the state's economic performance, then the jig is up. They're not going to do that, because they don't do that. We have decades of history on this, that they that while it seems and while their sponsors pledge that they're going to have a material impact on the state economy, they just don't. So that's kind of where I'm going to try and pitch. We'll see how that goes.
Well, and it's nothing complicated either, right? You have a commitment that you're going to deliver this economic benefit, and if you don't, then you give at least a portion of that money back. And yet you almost never see that.
Yeah. So I would like it if the performance target was we're going to produce this economic benefit by this date. And if we don't do that, we stop handing out new awards.
Right.
Like that, that would be my dream goal, because there would be an economic development program that did not live up to its economic outcomes. But I mean, we'll see how that goes. I hope it's tempting to legislators as they're considering these programs, because I do think that some of them really do think, like, buy into the hype. They really do think that that these things are economically important and that they're beneficial to this to the state.
Yeah.
Okay. I will I think differently, but that's okay too. Let's can we agree on this performance or on this performance outcome? We'll see how that goes. I'm not optimistic about it, especially because when you look at the economic assessments from our economic development administrators, they're completely self-serving.
Yeah.
So in the state of Michigan, we have a tourism program called Pure Michigan. You've probably seen the ads with the Tim Allen voiceover, although I'm not sure he's still doing that.
Yep.
But they're nice ads. The people, I don't like that they're taxpayer financed. It's like, look, if you're going to benefit an industry, have the people in the industry get together and pay for a tourism campaign, leave taxpayers out of this. But, you know, some legislators think that it's a wise investment of public dollars. And the administrators, though, say that there are huge returns to the state treasury for this program. For every dollar you spend on Pure Michigan, it returns $7 in tax revenue to the state. And you know, multiple times that to the state economy. And we're like, well, how'd you come up with that? And it's like, well, we put some numbers into a black box model and out they came. It's like, okay, what numbers did you put in that black box model? Because did you account for costs? And we and the state has been has mentioned repeatedly that, like, no, we're not going to tell you. We're not, this is, we used a contractor. We're not sharing that. We've actually sued the state to try and get those numbers because our economic development administrators are not interested, or at least ostensibly don't seem to be interested in justifying their programs, their claims. They're interested in getting more money to play with and announcing their success.
Yep.
So it's frustrating thing to see. I really don't like that, especially on those, like, it is okay for politicians to bolster bluster, that's the right word, as in to say how great of a thing there is. And they're accountable to voters. And if voters don't like their bluster, they can vote them out of office. You can't do that for economic administrators. Our administrators are supposed to be public servants. And I don't like it when they mislead the public. That fundamentally offends me, and it ought to offend other voters too.
Yeah.
That's just one of my many gripes.
Well, that whole notion of the cost benefit analysis is one that just seems to be farther and farther away from anything we ever talk about when it comes to public policy. But you're right. Anything we do that's supposed to be an investment should be paying a dividend, should be giving a return. And as the Mackinac Center's work has shown, that's so rarely the case.
Yeah. And to have our, to be held to high standards and to be able to justify their expenditures at these high standards. But this is a general problem that you get with public policy, not just in economic development policy, but in education, in environmental protection, in job training issues. Oh, I mean, all sorts of food, which is that our lawmakers want to be judged based on inputs, not outputs.
Yeah.
As in, you should vote for me because I gave money to politically favorable people, not that I produce these important public benefits. Yeah. And I think that's something that people should notice more and should hold our lawmakers to higher standards. Because when you listen to the claims that are being that our elected officials make, and this is not an especially partisan partisan tendency either.
No.
It is, it's look at all of these inputs I have secured, not look at all of these important outcomes I have accomplished.
Right. Yeah. And you're right. It's not partisan. I mean, here in Michigan, we can pick on the Democrats who are in power today and had been in the past, but over in Wisconsin, you mentioned Foxconn, that was a Republican administration that foisted that debacle on the folks over there.
Yeah, so this issue, it has some interesting partisan angles to it. It is not like blue states and red states both offer selective subsidies to big firms. That happens everywhere. But there's also a cross ideological opposition to this. So, we're a free market think tank. I wish our appeals would be broad and that everyone would like what we say. But we tend to appeal more to people on the right. Well, we've got friends who are on the left who are great on this issue. And what is interesting about the issue of handing out selective business subsidies is that a lot of times the people on the right and the left, they can come together, but they come together on issues for different reasons. So, for instance, we're part of a coalition of people who are trying to loosen the state's occupational licensing rules so that they're less of a barrier to entry, and ensure that where they exist, they are securing public health benefits. There are some people on the left who want to do that too, but for the most part, like a lot of them are like, well, this helps prisoners get people out of prison that. This tends to be like a barrier to entry for them. We want to be more. And it's like, that's a good idea too. I can support it. But that's not necessarily my primary motive on this policy. On business subsidies, we hate them for the exact same reason. It's like government just shouldn't be handing out special favors. Mm-hmm. I think some of the explanation for why our lawmakers keep doing this might be a little bit different, but it's not an issue where people on the right and the left, like when they dig into this one, disagree for different reasons. We both see them as ineffective, expensive, and unfair.
Yep. Well, and to that end, the Mackinac Center did some excellent work that I came across back when the whole latest battery plant proposal was being discussed, the Whitmer administration and Ford, handing money to our Chinese friends to put a battery plant up there near
Big Rapids.
Big Rapids. And I had no idea, I wasn't in the state at the time, that we'd already been through this scenario with the Granholm administration. Our energy secretary
now
did the same thing. And you guys showed how ineffective and really, how that just squandered boatloads of taxpayer money.
Yeah, I mean, one of the lessons that you get from I wish states would learn, but I don't know that they're ever going to, which is
I'll mention one to you in a minute, but go ahead.
If you are going to have a jobs program, it needs to be tied to jobs. What the battery subsidy programs were doing was subsidizing specific outputs of manufacturing products. And a lot of these factories did it. They tapped in on that. They got their taxpayer subsidies, but they didn't meet the job performance that they expected. So we lost a ton of money. It didn't do the thing that lawmakers wanted it to do. So yeah, like you shouldn't hand out payments to companies for jobs until they actually create the jobs, because that's hard. Like,
claw it back when they don't.
Most of these things do have clawback requirements if you don't do it. But, a lot of times it's, okay, you gave money to this plant. The plant didn't work. They cashed in on some state subsidies. Then they then they eliminated jobs. But there's no one left now to pay you back your money. And then sometimes it's just, a lot of times it is the company didn't live up to expectations, but there are still jobs there. So let's just let them keep what they got, because we don't want to be mean to job providers. Yeah. There's a lot of shifting the goalposts on that too. Yep. But one of the lessons that lawmakers should get, if you're going to be engaged in this process, and I don't think you should be, but what happens is, like, companies rarely meet their expectations. So for the state's Michigan Economic Growth Authority program, which ran from 1995 to 2012, we looked at, like, all right, here's what they said, here's what they did. And only 2.3% of recipients lived up to their job creation announcements. So just 2.3%.
Wow.
Like, that's, again, like, it's
nobody.
A little more than one out of 50. Yeah. And so it's like, well, if this is going to be the case that like you don't live up to what's in your press release, you should make sure that money doesn't change hands until you actually start creating jobs. Yep. That's a lesson that our lawmakers have not learned. Like this new SOAR program writes huge checks over the short term. Companies get to collect a lot of money before they ever employ someone. And if they fail to meet job creation targets, maybe after 10 years, the state can ask for some of its money back. Maybe. Yeah. So it's just terrible structure for it. But yeah, I mean, the better call is the same thing that you would expect. And I think people both on the right and the left also want this, which is better business climate, quality of life issues.
Yep.
These are things that states have powerful influences over. It doesn't necessarily get you a photo op at the next groundbreaking ceremony, mm-hmm. but they're important things that matter to state economic growth. And we can honestly see this by the states that are growing in this post-pandemic recovery. It's not the states that are handing out the biggest checks to the biggest firms. It's Utah, it's Idaho. By the way, Utah and Idaho, underappreciated, just fast-growing states right now. Yep. But the big ones that get a lot more attention are Texas and Florida. Texas does some subsidy subsidization too. I don't think they're effective. There's the deal closing fund that I'm especially skeptical of, but it's not especially active. Florida, on the other hand, is getting rid of its selective subsidy programs. That's a good thing, and it's one of these fast-growing states. What matters to your state's economic future is not whether you hand out big checks to big companies, and I wish our lawmakers would recognize that.
Yeah. Well, one I've had my eye on, and actually interviewed Governor Greg Gianforte from Montana.
Yeah, I saw that.
Shows ago. Mm-hmm. And they're doing exactly that, you know, where they're tackling things to make their state appealing to manufacturers. And it's new for them. You know, they weren't known as a manufacturing state, but it's something they're going after, and they're going after the fundamentals. Mm-hmm. So they're making their tax policies more sensible for business. They're creating job training programs for the people who are going to need skilled trades and factory workers and housing, tackling the housing challenge, you know, going after those things that are the core needs of the manufacturers to come and then invest their own money.
Yeah. And as I understand it, though, like they're doing some really interesting stuff on housing and zoning policy in Montana to allow for more housing and different types of housing, because like a lot of the issue on housing is like you could build housing, but it's got to be in greenfields and look exactly like this, and it's a very regulated field, and a lot of these things just increase the costs and decrease your ability to build the types of housing that a lot of people want,
and a lot of people could
afford.
I'm going to keep watching those guys because, you know, my question for you on looking at, you know, the political sound bites that you talked about in the photo op doing the groundbreaking, how do states compete then when you've got a Gretchen Whitmer out there doling out huge dollops of cash to these big companies and getting all the publicity? How do states like Montana continue to say, you know what? Yeah, it's very splashy over there in Michigan, but come look at us.
Yeah. I mean, I do wish that our states and our state lawmakers would be thumping their chest about their economic performance, like actual economic performance, rather than things that just seem like they're evidence of job growth. Like we spend a lot of good taxpayer money on our Bureau of Labor Statistics, our Bureau of Economic Analysis to try and find out, you know, what is going on in the economy? What are the trends? Like how are states performing? And unfortunately, too many people seem to be distracted by instances of economic growth. And let me share something that I think is really underappreciated. Because I do think like if you get a handle on this stat, you'll see that like these job announcements that our lawmakers are so proud of, that promote so much, and that they have to offer, like take money from everyone and give to a single firm. Mm-hmm. that they think that this is necessary. It's just not at the scope necessary to improve states' actual economic performance. And that is this underappreciated amount of job creation and job loss that goes on in the economy every year, every month. So it's about 5% every quarter, which is massive. So in the state of Michigan, we create and lose over 800,000 jobs every year, create and lose. And that's out of an employment base of a little over 4 million. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a massive amount of turnover that goes on. The economy moves so fast.
That's just the normal churn in the economy. Yeah.
Just the normal churn in the economy of people finding new employment opportunities and people losing their jobs. And by the way, that's also a little bit undercounted, because the way that they calculate this is to look at, like, all right, individual office A, at the end of this quarter, how many jobs did you have? It's like, well, we've got five. It's like, well, last quarter you had one, so you added one job, and then we just calculate all that. It's like, well, that office could have had a five-person turnover. Five people could have gotten employed and five people could have lost, and it'll only show up as one. But still, even with all that, like 800,000 jobs a year for these job announcements, even these big ones, that get all these headlines, you're talking about 1,000 jobs, 2,000 jobs. Employment facilities don't get much bigger than that these days. It's just not at the scope that's necessary to affect the state's economic performance. What does are things that matter to a lot of businesses. So policies that, obviously your tax policy, every business is going to pay taxes. Every person is subject to income taxes. Like, that's a powerful policy that touches a lot of people and is a discouragement to employment, to investment. Yeah. Other things that states can do that matter a lot, like every utility company is subject to state regulation. And if you don't have good regulation of your utilities, you will, like Michigan, have unreliable electricity at higher than average rates. Yep. That's a bad thing. This also affects every business. And if we do that, if we do electricity regulation better, we can have more reliable energy at lower prices. Those are some of the things that we cover. I want to plug our work on occupational licensing, especially now that I think it's like almost 20% of the workforce is subject to one of these occupational licensing requirements. Yeah. Like, it matters to a lot of people. And that's what lawmakers should be looking at when they're trying to grow the economy, of like, what are some of the rules that we can change to, secure important public things. Like, I'm not arguing to get rid of all of the taxes, but I do think that most states can afford to reduce some of their taxes too, right, especially after this pandemic where state revenues just exploded. Mm-hmm. But can review your occupational licensing rules, can review your environment or your electrical regulation, and then do all sorts of public services better, more effective, and better and more effective and for lower costs. Like, those are all really important things that we can talk about that can actually help move your economy ahead. And when you look at the states that are doing well, they tend to be the states that are doing those things.
Right. Well, and back to your point about taxes, it's what people kind of miss there in the connection is, if you're doling out these huge dollops of taxpayer money, that's coming out of people's pockets, right? So
especially on the state
and lower the burden for everybody.
Yeah, especially and again, like with I'm in the state of Michigan. We do a lot of subsidizing businesses in the state of Michigan. I keep a scorecard for our lawmakers about how many business subsidies they authorize and how many they vote against. So each lawmaker has a record for it going back to 2001. Last year, lawmakers approved $4.3 billion of business subsidies. Like, that's a huge amount of transfers. Like that's, let's see. This is just a comparison. We could probably cut the income tax by a third, and that's the state's largest tax for all that money. That, I mean, for just a year, of course, but it's a massive part of that. I mean, that's more than we spend on state universities. It's more it's more than we spend on state the taxpayers spend on state universities and prisons combined. Like it's a massive amount of money. And those other institutions provide important benefits to the public. I don't think that our economic development programs that are not required to develop the economy are doing are providing important public services.
Yeah, the basics.
Yeah.
All excellent points. And, I'm doing my part to help get that word out there. So what's next for you? What are you focusing on for yourself? What is the Mackinac Center focusing on?
Oh, we've got a lot of irons in the fire right now. But I wanted to point out just two things. Governor Whitmer does seem to be very interested in handing out more business subsidies. And we're going to try and speak truth to power on that issue. Because there are, I mean, we didn't talk a lot about the reasons why states subsidize select businesses, but a lot of it is just because, as a general rule, someone comes up to state lawmakers and says, please give me special favors. And our lawmakers say, yes, that sounds like a good idea. I mean, that's basically like we offer these things because someone asks for it.
Yeah.
Our lawmakers, despite what they might tell you, are not that creative, but a lot of lobbyists are.
Yeah.
So we're going to be having that fight. We was just testifying earlier this week about film subsidies that our lawmakers were considering again.
Yep.
But one thing I think I'm going to try and that I think people should know about is that when we're having these debates about how much to offer in selective business subsidies, one of the points that our lawmakers will make is that we need to do this because other states offer subsidies too. We need to compete with them.
Yep.
Well, you actually don't need to compete with them. In fact, because they don't work. But if you do think that it's necessary, that if you're only doing this because other states are, well, that's kind of a race to the bottom. But but there's a better way of doing that, which is, okay, fine, add a subsidy to compete with other states, but you should try to work with other states to disarm yourselves of these programs. Yeah. So I have, in working with a coalition of people, to introduce a state compact where to get states to disarm themselves of their selective subsidy programs. So states can agree with each other to say, this is not how we want to be competing with each other. We'll end our programs if you end yours. Yep. And I would love to see more candidates running on this issue. And so what I'm going to do is try and pitch some people, that subject to endorse this interstate compact to eliminate corporate welfare.
Excellent. Yeah. I'm all for it.
Yeah.
Well, excellent, James. Anything to share with the audience here before we wrap up?
Well, I guess I should, if there's a takeaway for your audience, it's that there is a perennial demand from our lawmakers to do something about jobs. And way too many of them interpret that mandate as being, oh, I need to offer select subsidies to the next business that comes around. And what I want everyone, I think there's a good case to be made against that, but I just want them to be more skeptical whenever they see a politician issuing a press release that they created a lot of jobs. What I would want them to understand is they're using my money to do that often, not always, often. Sometimes it really is about lowering a business's tax burdens too, not writing them a big check. Right. But I want them to know that when they do that, they're doing it with your money, and that what they're doing is ineffective at creating jobs, unfair to the businesses who don't get preferred treatment, and expensive to the state government.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and the other thing to me that occurred in my mind as you were talking about that is watch the other side of the coin. We've been hemorrhaging jobs at the same time. The layoffs with the automakers, some manufacturers shutting down. that goes to those fundamentals that we haven't been taking care of. There's a lot of reasons for those things, but, you know, being a high tech state and a high regulation state, that makes it tough for other manufacturers to compete. And you want your existing manufacturers to stay here before you start thinking about bringing others in, right?
Yeah. And don't forget labor strife as well. I think sure, another yeah. important thing that lawmakers should do is to make sure that private sector people who are covered by collective bargaining agreements can opt out of union membership. It's right to work law. I think that's important to try and get unions to be to come into the 21st century so they can be a positive influence for both their members and for companies too. And we just don't have that right now. We have antagonistic union policies based on an antagonistic relationship, which I don't think is good for job growth for one. And I don't think it's especially good for the states that have a lot of unions that are constantly at war with their employers.
Right. Yeah. It's not good for the rank and file either.
Yeah.
Yep. Excellent point, James. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. We appreciate all your insights.
Thank you for having me on, Jim.
All right. Well, we'll have to do this again sometime as you move forward and work on tackling all those other subsidies. And of course, thanks to all of you out there. You're the reason we're here. Thanks for joining us today. We're here at least once a week. Now here lately, it's even been twice a week. Definitely every Tuesday. Look for another show potentially on Thursdays. So yeah, tune in. We've got more stories. I mean, James brought some excellent education today. I can't promise they're all going to be as educational as what James Homan brought to us today from the Mackinac Center for Public Policy, but they're all going to be educational. So thanks so much.
Thanks for tuning in to Manufacturing Talks with Jim Benosky. Watch for new episodes dropping every Tuesday. Don't forget to like, share, comment, and subscribe.